Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada Ki. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who pretended to be a gigantic fish, who restored the Vedic literature to Lord Brahma when Lord Brahma awakened from sleep, and who explained the essence of Vedic literature to King Satyavrata and the great saintly persons. Purport. Here is a summary of Satyavrata's meeting with the fish incarnation Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu's purpose was to take back all the Vedic literatures from the demon Hayagriva and restore them to Lord Brahma. Incidentally, by his causeless mercy, the Lord spoke with Satyavrata. The word Satyavratanam is significant because it indicates that those on the level of Satyavrata can take knowledge from the Vedas delivered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whatever is spoken by the Supreme Lord is accepted as Veda. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Vedanta Krit Vedavit, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the compiler of all Vedic knowledge, and he knows the purport of the Vedas. Therefore, anyone who takes knowledge from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, or from Bhagavad Gita as it is, knows the purpose of the Vedas, Vedestra Sarved Aham Eva Vedyo. One cannot understand Vedic knowledge from the Vedavada Ruttas, who read the Vedas and misconstrue their subject matter. One has to know the Vedas from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 8th canto, 24th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Matsya, the Lord's Fish Incarnation. And indeed, it's also the end of the 8th canto. But there's a small note that Prabhupada adds at the end. This commentation has been finished in our New Delhi centre today, the 1st of September 1976, the day of Radha Ashtami, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the Acharyas. Shri Narottam Das Thakur says, Tandera Charana Sevi Bhakta Shanivash Janma Janmahoy A Abhilash. I am attempting to present Srimad Bhagavatam in the English language by the order of my spiritual master, Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And by his grace, the work of translation is gradually progressing, and the European and American devotees who have joined this Krishna consciousness movement are helping me considerably. Thus we have expectations of finishing this great task before my passing away. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Om Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tvam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakham Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vashadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna. So first we'd like to ask and beg for the blessings of the Vaishnavas, especially the senior devotees in this room. I feel very ashamed sitting on the Vyasasana in front of so many of my seniors, but I beg their blessings. I beg for their blessings to be able to say something which is beneficial for myself and for the assembled devotees. So we've come to the end of the eighth canto. And I was reflecting that it takes quite some time to get through the entire Bhagavatam. I think it's taken over a year to go through the eighth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So there's many things that we've learnt in this eighth canto. There's many wonderful pastimes, very instructive pastimes that we've seen. So the first few chapters of the eighth canto explain the activities and the situation of Gajendra, the king of the elephants, and how he found himself in water, a very unfamiliar situation. An elephant is usually on the land, but he found himself in the water, in the clutches of a crocodile, and how he surrendered himself unto the personality of Godhead. And in that situation, he became purified and became a real devotee of the Lord and was saved by the Lord himself. We also hear about the eternal battle between the demons and the demigods. They're always fighting. But at a certain point, they decide to call a truce and they engage in the churning of the milk ocean. And through that churning, many wonderful things come, including nectar, which gives immortality. And in order for the demons not to sabotage the demigods' plans and not to take the nectar, Mohini Murti has to come to save the day. So within the pastime of the churning of the milk ocean, we see that Mohini Murti appears, who is, of course, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the form of a woman, to save the nectar and give it to the demigods. And within that, Lord Shiva is also enamored by Mohini Murti, and there's a whole pastime there. Also in the eighth canto, we find the wonderful pastime of Bali Maharaj and his surrender, his absolute surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the king of the demons, but despite being born in a demon family, he's the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. Despite being born in such a family, he is a great devotee of the Lord, and he surrenders. The Lord tests him, a very strong, very tough test, but he passes the test. And of course, here in the 24th chapter, we've come to the conclusion of the Matsyavatara. So within each canto, Shukadeva Goswami describes in the second canto, 10th chapter, first verse, he describes Atra sarga visargascha sthanam poshanam utaya manvantare shanukatha nirodo mukti rashrayaha. So he describes the 10 main topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He describes sarga, the primary creation, visarga, the secondary creation, sthanam, which describes the planetary systems, poshanam, which is protection by the Lord, utaya, the creative impetus, so that's canto 5, manvantar, so the change of manus, that's canto 6, ishanu katha, so the science of God, that's canto 7, nirodo, which is canto 8, that's describing going home back to Godhead, Muktir, which describes liberation, and Ashrayaha, the Summum Bonum, that's the 10th canto. So these are the translations that Prabhupada gives in that verse. So the 8th canto is described as returning home back to Godhead. And we also find the Acharya's comment that each of these cantos represent one particular topic, as is described in this verse. But also the Acharya's comment that within each of the cantos, all of these topics are also covered. So there's some... each of the cantos is very complete. But the first canto especially, Prabhupada said that he included everything in this first canto. Because as we see, Prabhupada is at the end of the purport where he describes that the hope is that before Prabhupada leaves, he'll complete his commentation on the Bhagavatam. It was always on his mind. Will I complete this Bhagavatam? Will I complete this translation? Because, of course, it is Prabhupada's magnum opus. It's his primary work. And therefore, in the first canto, Prabhupada really, it packs a punch. It's very powerful. Because Prabhupada wanted to make sure he included the essence of Krishna consciousness in this first canto in case he didn't complete everything. And this is really the essence of Prabhupada's mission. The Srimad Bhagavatam really provides and gives us an insight into that essence. Once Prabhupada was giving class, and it was, as always, it was a very powerful class, packed full of insight. And knowledge, and pushing people to take responsibility for the Krishna consciousness movement. And at the end, one man was very impressed and he got up and he said, "Oh, Prabhupada, you're such a great personality. Please give me your blessings." And Prabhupada looked at him and he said, "Do you know, you have no idea, there's so much headache in running a worldwide society. Thousands of disciples, so many followers, so many centers, so many issues, so many problems, so much headache, and you're asking for blessings. You'll get blessings if you take responsibility for this movement. Only then will you get blessings." So this is what Prabhupada was driving us to do. He wants us to take responsibility for the movement. So one running joke that we have in the ashram is very often during Guru Puja, we say, "Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada." We're all jumping and we're dancing. We have our hands in the air. But what does all this mean? What does it mean to be jumping for Prabhupada? What does Jaya Prabhupada mean? Surely it's not just an act. And this goes through in all aspects of our Krishna consciousness. What do the activities actually mean? What is the deeper meaning behind them? So when we're putting our hands in the air, we're surrendering to Prabhupada. When we're saying Jaya Prabhupada, we're glorifying Prabhupada, and we're saying, "I am your follower. What can I do for you? How can I serve you?" And it's very clear from Prabhupada's teachings that he wanted us all, in our own way, we're all individuals, but in our own way, to take responsibility for the movement, to take this movement forward, as Prabhupada is saying in the purport. So jumping up and down isn't just an act of devotion. It's not an act, full stop. It's something that we actually have to do in our lives in a very practical, real way. We have to preach. We have to preach the Krishna consciousness movement. I was in Dallas and Houston recently last month, and I was speaking to one devotee, and I asked him if I could tell him his story, share his story, and he did agree. So, his name is Nityananda Prabhu. He's a temple president in Dallas, and we were in Houston together. There was a Houston temple opening on the 18th and 19th of May. And he told me his story of how he came to Krishna consciousness. He's Fijian born. And he was a lawyer by trade. He studied law at university. And he became an attorney in the courts. But he left that to run his father's business, his family business. And it was very successful, one of the most well-known families in Fiji. And the capital of Fiji, Suva, so they were based there. And they had a huge house, very opulent, very rich. But right next to their house was the Hare Krishna temple. But what happens in a Hare Krishna temple at 4:30 in the morning? The devotees get up early in the morning and they chant Hare Krishna. And the devotees in Fiji were very fired up. So at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, they were banging the mridangas. They were banging the kartals, and they also had wampas, which I think are banned according to recent GBC regulations during Mangalarti. They were making a lot of noise. And so, of course, his family was very upset. And they tried many ways in order to get the Hare Krishna temple to move. But they were unsuccessful. Of course, I think Hare Krishna is generally, if you're going to join the Krishna consciousness movement, you're probably quite determined by nature anyway. So they were also very determined to stay put. And so they were quite ruthless. And so he told me that the plan was, the family plan was, to kill the leader of the Hare Krishnas. And that would definitely scare them away. Does anyone know who the leader was in the early 80s in Fiji, who would regularly go to Fiji? Correct. It was Tamal Krishna Maharaj. So within himself, this devotee, Nityananda Prabhu, at that time in the early 80s, he was, as well as being a very successful businessman, he was also on a spiritual journey. He was looking for a guru. So he's reading many different scriptures, many different books. And he came across one book, and he said, this book was very interesting. It was describing the nature of the guru. And it was explaining how the guru can be anyone. You can learn anything from anywhere, which is in line with our understanding. It said that the guru can be a friend or an enemy. The guru can be a man or a woman. The guru can be young or old. The guru can be anyone. And this really stuck with him. So wherever he went, he was looking for his guru in his life. So one day his friend came along and he said, you know what, there's some holy man, there's some spiritualist who's come. And let's go and hear him. Let's see what he has to say. And he was a little reluctant, but he went anyway because his friend was encouraging him to go. And he thought, well, I'm looking for a guru. So he went along to lecture. And lo and behold, it was a Hare Krishna. And it was actually Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And he heard Tamal Krishna Maharaj with a skeptical mind. But Tamal Krishna Maharaj said nothing which he disagreed with. And so he thought, well, actually, it's not too bad. He doesn't have anything terrible to say. So then there was a lecture the next day, and he went along again, and he thought to himself that he hadn't actually asked any questions, because one of the processes of finding a guru is to inquire from the guru. So at the end of the lecture, he asked some questions. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj answered the questions quite satisfyingly. So after the lecture, he asked Tamal Krishna Maharaj if he could meet with him. So Maharaj said, okay, let's meet tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Come to this address. And so this businessman, who's now Nityananda Prabhu, he went along at 6 a.m. the next morning, and he was waiting. 6:30, still waiting. 7 o'clock, still waiting. 8 o'clock, still waiting. And he said, I'm a businessman, I don't have time for this. I've got so many things to do in my day. I don't have time to wait around for some man who can't be bothered to meet me. And so he was about to leave, but then some devotees stopped him from leaving and said, actually, Tamal Krishna Maharaj is at another address. So then he made his way to the other side of the city, quite determined, obviously. And eventually he met with Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And Maharaj was sitting in his chair in his room. And for 20 minutes, Tamal Krishna Maharaj just sat there chanting japa. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And this businessman was looking at Tamal Krishna Maharaj thinking, why am I here? He's not doing anything. But it was almost like a battle. Because on one level they were enemies, but on another level, he was looking for a guru, so he was trying to find out whether this was actually his guru. And what was ringing in his head was, a guru can be a friend or an enemy. So eventually, Tamal Krishna Maharaj spoke. He said, you must be busy. And he said, yes, I'm busy. It's now 8:30, and I've got many things to do. You've kept me waiting for 2.5 hours. So then Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, so you must have a plan for the day. And he said, yes, of course I've got a plan. And he said, let me see the plan. Have you got it written down? And he said, yes, I always have my plan written down. I'm a busy man. I have so many appointments. I have everything, my whole day planned out. And so Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, let me see the plan. So he got the paper, saw the plan, looked at it for a few minutes, and then turned it around and started scribbling on a piece of paper, on that very paper. And he gave it back to him. And the businessman looked at the paper and he said, this is pretty much the same as what I have. But he said, is there a difference? And he said, yeah. So in the morning I get up, I have a shower, I do some meditation and then I go swimming. And then I get on with the rest of my day. But you changed it a little. You say I should get up, I should have a shower, I should do my meditation, then I should carry on with my day. And then midday, I should go swimming. And he said, yes. Chamakushima said, yes. He said, if you go swimming in the middle of the day, I guarantee you, you will double your profits. Because if you go swimming in the middle of the day, it's a refresher. So for the second half of the day, you'll be much fitter and much more conscious, and much more aware, much more effective in everything you do for the rest of your day. And the businessman thought, actually, that makes a lot of sense. And he said, he's speaking my language. This was very instructive. When I heard this, it really hit me. Preaching is not stereotyped. Preaching can happen in any arena. But the art of preaching is to be able to speak to anyone and everyone and to speak their language, to be able to connect with them on the level that they're at and then bring them in and eventually give them the principles of Krishna consciousness. So to a businessman, you have to speak business to begin with. If you tell him to chant Hare Krishna and to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's great, that's wonderful, but how likely is he to actually do that, given his situation? So, just to complete the story, he was very inspired by Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and he thought maybe this person has something to say. So he said, I'll join you. Well, he said, Tamal Krishna Maharaj gave him a ultimatum. He said, don't just join us. If for 3 months you chant Hare Krishna and you follow the four regulative principles and it doesn't change your life, it doesn't give you a deeper satisfaction and fulfillment, then you can forget about us and we'll move the temple. We'll do as you want. But if after 3 months this actually has an impact on your life, then we'll stay and you'll join the temple. 3 months later, Nityananda Prabhu joined, and soon after that, he became an initiated disciple of His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and he's now the temple president in Dallas and has various GBC responsibilities. So, preaching is a very powerful thing and something that we all have to learn to do. In December 1935, Prabhupada met his spiritual master Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and he met him in Radhakund. And in that period, a new temple had opened in Calcutta. It was a Bag Bazar temple. A wonderful, very opulent marble temple. Very beautiful. If you go there today, then there's a handful of people living there. Quite quiet. And unfortunately, at that time, there was a lot of fighting. All of the brahmacharis and sannyasis, the residents there, they all wanted their own space, their own patch, their own area to be in. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very upset. He said to Prabhupada that there's fire in the mutt. Everyone's fighting. He said, if I had my way, I'd sell all the marble and I'd print books. And so from this, Prabhupada really gained a deep instruction in his heart. If ever you have money, he said, print books. And so this became Prabhupada's mission. So it's interesting that Shishirada Gokulananda ki, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Shishi Gornitai ki. On the 9th of December 1936, Prabhupada wrote to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and he said, how can I serve you? What can I do for you, Guru Maharaj? And just 4 days later, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur on the 13th of December replied that I want you to push on this movement in the English language. And just 2 or 3 weeks later, on the 31st of December 1936, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur passed away. So Prabhupada really took this to heart. This is really his mission. There's unlimited things that we can write about Krishna. Prabhupada wrote 60, 70, 80 volumes of books about Krishna. But it's never enough. Once a big politician in Calcutta, he came to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and he said, at that time they were publishing a newspaper called Anadia Prakash, It was a daily newspaper. And it's very interesting. The newspaper was 4 pages long. On the outside of the newspaper, on the front, there were various stories to do with what's happening in the day. So what's happening in people's lives, politics, history, as you'd see in any other newspaper. And on the back, it was all about business and economics. And this was called Nadia Prakash. But in between, the 2 pages in between were all about what's happening in Goloka. It was all about Krishna consciousness. It was all about the philosophy and the spiritual world. So this is also very interesting. This was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's preaching. Very open-minded, very intelligent. So a person would see a newspaper, they'd see, it looks like a normal newspaper. But when they open it, they learn about Krishna. So they're publishing this newspaper. And a big politician, he came to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And he said, what is this newspaper that you're publishing? And what are you writing about? It's a daily newspaper. So on a daily basis, you're writing pages about Goloka. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's reply was very interesting. He said that the whole material, the whole creation is huge. 1/4 of that creation is the material world. Within this material creation, there are unlimited planets, millions and billions of universes. And within these millions and billions of universes, we are in one universe. Within this one universe, there are so many galaxies. We're in one galaxy. Within this one galaxy, there's so many solar systems. Within this solar system, there are so many planets. We're on this one Earth. And if you take one city, take the city of Calcutta, there are so many newspapers. So many newspapers, so many pages which describe what's going on in this city or in this country or in this world. So many pages are being written about the material world. Now imagine the spiritual world. It's 3/4 of the whole creation. Huge. So there's so much to talk about. Forget daily. We could write a newspaper for every minute. Every minute we could be producing a new newspaper talking about what's happening in the spiritual world. Not every minute, every second. Every second we could be producing a new newspaper describing what's happening in the spiritual world. So there's so much to talk about. So on this basis, Prabhupada said that 60 volumes of the Bhagavatam is tiny. There's unlimited amounts to talk about and to share about Krishna. And so not only do we have to delve into this, in our own personal spiritual lives, but we also have to share these wonderful pastimes of Krishna and Krishna consciousness with the world. And if we look at Prabhupada's teachings, Prabhupada's emphasis, there's nothing he emphasized more than the distribution of his books. He said, please distribute book, distribute book, distribute book. It's such a wonderful, powerful activity. I've got an inspiring letter, which I just want to read, about the distribution of books. Around 1579 AD, Narottam Das Thakur wrote to Srila Jiva Goswami, and this was written on palm leaves. He's writing to Srila Jiva Goswami. He's giving the book distribution scores for that year. So Srinivasacharya, Narottam Das Thakur, and Shyamananda Pandit, the three preachers, they were distributing books at that time too. And so Narottam Das Thakur is giving Jiva Goswami the book distribution scores. So he's describing various books, the Bhagavatam, the Vaishnava Toshini. So Srinivasacharya, he distributed 6 Vaishnava Toshini and Bhagavatams. Gyanadas's songs, 23. 19 of Govindadas's songs. 11 of Narottam Das Thakur's Pratnas. 1 Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. 22 Chaitanya Bhagavats. 11 Chaitanya Mangals by Lochan Das Thakur. 1 Hari Bhakti Vilas. and one of Murari Gupta's Kadachas. So that is Srinivasacharya. Srinivasacharya ki? Narottam Das Thakur distributed in 1579 AD. Keep things simple. Narottam Das Thakur distributed 2 Bhagavatams, 21 Gyanadasa songs, 56 Prajnas, 45 Chaitanya Bhagavats, 5 Chaitanya Chandramitas, and 34 of Vasu Ghosh's Gauranga Padyavalis. Narottam Das Thakur ki? Shyamananda Pandit distributed 4 Bhagavatams, 10 Gyanadasa songs, 11 Govindadasa songs, 34 other songs, 16 Narottam Das Thakur's Prachnas, 5 Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhus, 1 Ujjwala Nilamani, 25 Chaitanya Bhagavats, 15 Chaitanya Chandramitas, and 14 Vasu Ghosh's Gauranga Padyavalis. Shyamananda Pandit ki? So Narottam Das Thakur concludes the letter with a very emotional comment. And this is very insightful, so please listen carefully. He says, until we are able to develop another type of technology to print the books, due to the difficulty involved in creating books by hand, most of our book distribution program will be postponed. We are sure that one day some magnanimous person will come and will develop the movement of ecstatic love of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, distributing books all over the world. Until then, what will we, persons who are poor, bereft, and abominable, do? What is the benefit of discussing the stories of the Lord's incarnations, worshipping the Lord's deities, giving musical recitations of the Lord's pastimes, chanting the Lord's holy names on beads, when we have such small scores? So this was Narottam Das Thakur talking to, writing to Srila Jiva Goswami. So we see that this book distribution is not just something which we do because we're Hare Krishnas. It's not just another activity. It's something which was being done by the Acharyas, Shyamananda Pandit, Narottam Das Thakur. They were all engaging in this book distribution. And so when we talk about book distribution being one of the primary activities and something which Prabhupada emphasized so much, we should really have faith in Prabhupada's words, because he wasn't just speaking because it's not a whim, it's not something which is ordinary, it's something which he really wanted on a very deep basis. Because when I was listening to a lecture recently, it was something which probably many devotees have heard, is Tamal Krishnamaj. He was speaking in Dallas in 1995. It's called the Sankirtan Classic. And he was describing how when someone is on the street distributing books, then never think you're alone, because all of the Acharyas are there watching. And when you distribute a book, then they all applaud and they say, sadhu, sadhu. So imagine, next time you're distributing a book on the street, just imagine the Acharyas are all lined up there, and they're all applauding, sadhu, sadhu. So it's such a wonderful, enlivening activity, and everyone is watching. Krishna's watching, the Acharyas are watching, and they're applauding, they're happy. In a letter to Rameshwar, Prabhupada was very pleased. Well, Rameshwar wrote a letter, and he said, he said to Prabhupada, that Srila Prabhupada, this is a perfect reciprocation. So he had given some scores to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was very happy. So Rameshwar Prabhu said to Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, this is a perfect reciprocation. You're working so hard day and night to write these books, and all the devotees are working day and night to distribute them. And Prabhupada said, I am writing the drama, and they are playing on the stage. So when Prabhupada landed in New York, or when he landed in Boston, he wrote Markine Bhagavad Dharam. He wrote this wonderful poem. And there in that poem, Prabhupada really reveals his mood of surrender and his humility. Because Prabhupada is essentially saying in that poem that this land is full of passion and ignorance. No one here has ever heard of Krishna. And I am here, one lone man. And I've come here to give them Krishna consciousness. What can I do? And this is Prabhupada, an exalted Paramahamsa devotee, saying, what can I do? So he's surrendering and he's saying, I cannot do anything, so please empower me. If you wish, Lord, please empower me to share this holy name with everyone, with the people of America. If you wish. He says, O Lord, make me dance, make me dance, make me dance. So Prabhupada is making himself a puppet in the hands of the Lord, in the hands of the Acharyas. And so we similarly have to do the same. Prabhupada's writing the script. He's writing the play. So we just have to be actors in that drama. We have to be puppets in Prabhupada's hands. So similarly, we have to take the same mood of surrender and humility. What can I do? I can't do anything. So Prabhupada, Acharyas, Krishna, make me dance, make me dance, make me dance. Essentially, we can't do anything. If a book goes out, it's very easy to begin to believe and think that this is me. This is my potency. Those amazing words or that smile, that's what really did it. But it's nothing really to do with us. Anything that really happens is happening by the will of the Lord. Not a blade of grass moves without his sanction. So I think I'll end there. Thank you. If there's any comments, corrections...